is our speaker today, very graciously volunteered, and
I am Ben, recovering codependent.
Hey, Ben.
Hi, everybody. I'm a newcomer to this meeting. You guys have a really good fellowship here, so this is very cool. Where do I start? We talked about what. I'm not sure how many people in here have attended CODA meetings or Codependents Anonymous or members of that group. Should I collect my thoughts for a second. Codependents Anonymous is basically for people who have trouble having functional relationships with other people. It's sort of like our drug is people. So being able to have like a functional relationship where we don't fall down a path of and working with or enabling somebody to continue their addiction in order to make ourselves feel better or make ourselves feel whole or complete. So there's a lot more to it than that, but that's sort of where it starts. That's why, you know, our first step says, I'm powerless over others. We are powerless over others. We, because it's a program about all of us, and we can't do it alone. And others, because that's really what it is. I came to CODA in 2006, was my first meeting in March. It was really, really broken. I had just been in a 14-year relationship with someone who was a practicing in addiction and had some mental health issues, and I was doing everything to support that relationship. But then I believed that I was not ever doing enough. And when I say doing everything, I don't mean that I didn't do. I did 50%, you know, which is what I think in all relationships. In CODA, we learn that we're like half of a functional relationship. Each partner contributes 50%. But I felt like I was doing 90% of the work, and then I was resentful and frustrated, and passive aggressive, and a lot of other really fun character defects. You know, that I'm sure. I hope I'm in a familiar company here with people who understand what I'm talking about. It's just that we just express it, you know, in different ways. I would do more and try and be more, and then get angrier about it. And so in 2006, there had been two years of really sort of like 2 years of a real extreme stress in the relationship I was in. I had three kids together, and I was like lost, struggling, trying to figure out why this was so. Seemed to be so broke. Everything seemed to be so broken, and I started going to therapy. And I, by grace of a higher power, found CODA. I'd already been introduced to it years before. My dad was in a member in CODA. He's lapsed a little bit since then, but he spent a lot of time in the late '90s in CODA, and he talked to me a lot about it. And it was a foreign language. It was like, you know, I was younger, and I was like, okay, well, that's your problem. You know, I didn't say that to him, but I was thinking like, oh, whatever, you know, that's, you're going through that part of your life or whatever. And so I guess I was like, there's no, I don't have whatever issue he's talking about. And he was really trying to share with me, and now I know back, I can think back now, my dad was trying to share like his journey, his experience, and hopefully some hope, but I just didn't get that message. Maybe he saw some things in me already that I didn't see in myself yet. And so anyways, fast forward a while, you know, I think he sort of, my dad watched me go through this stuff in this relationship. And so, you know, I think at a certain point he knew that he couldn't tell me that I was codependent, but I think he was very grateful when I found the program on my own, because we all have to find this on our own. You know, I don't think anybody gets here by somebody else dragging them here. That stays, anyways. You know, we all get here because we have to be in enough pain to be like, I don't know what the fuck to do anymore. And so I did that. And in March 2006, I did that. I walked into the CODA room in Walnut Creek, and It's a good, very healthy meeting there if you're ever looking for a meeting in that area. And a couple people, you know, said hi right away, and I was like, am I, you hear a lot of people say when they come into CODA, as I'm sure many other programs will say, you know, well, I'm here, I don't know if I'm codependent. I'm not sure if that's my problem or not. I'm just here to listen. You know, and in my head, I know that's like, if you cross through that, you know, you cross over the threshold, the chances are that's why you're here. You know, that's, you didn't find this on accident, you know. And so I did the same thing, and I sat, and the message I heard was really refreshing. Like, what I heard from people, they were speaking my language. They were telling my story. I just sat and listened, and I heard some really good shares. In the end, I was like, wow, when is the next one of these meetings? You know, is there one tomorrow? And they said, keep coming back. And, you know, so I went away for a week, and I thought about that meeting for a while, and stuff continued to be really hard at home. And I was thinking that, went back in those days, I was thinking that the person I was with was causing all these problems in our relationship, and so I was having to deal with it. Like, that's what I thought it was. I thought it was like that it was put upon me, like I was the victim, you know. That it was something where if I just did more right, did things perfectly every time, did things better than I did them last time, then there wouldn't be any fights, there wouldn't be any anger, there wouldn't be any more using, any more prescription pill taking, all those things that I was witnessing. And that just, that doesn't work, you know, that wasn't, that just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. But what I realized in going to, in therapy and then in going to CODA is I found that I had to look within myself and see what was going on inside of me, that I believed that that was all I deserved out of a relationship, and that I believed that that I couldn't be an equal partner in a relationship. You know, and I was doing my own things. I was never diagnosed as anorexic, but I was I would control what I ate, so I wouldn't I don't say I'd starve myself, but I would definitely have that behaviors where I was like not, I was 40 pounds lighter than I am now. So I was very, very controlling about what I ate. As a kid, I would, I don't know how far back this goes, I'll go into my experience in the past, but you know, control is a huge part. I can think of any of the programs we're in. And for codependents, control is something where, you know, like, I believe that really I can, you know, levitate objects in my head, that kind of thing. You know, like, I believe that I can really move them out. If I just keep trying hard enough in my mind, I can think that thing into reality. And that stuff will drive you crazy at a certain point, you know. And at points in my disease, you know, I was using substances at points to cope with stuff. I was checked out a lot, checked out from life, just sort of like, I told my sponsor when I first started, I said I felt like a ghost in my house. I felt like I walked around and that nobody knew who I was, nobody noticed me or saw me, but I was there for sure. I know I was there. But I felt like I'd put myself in this invisible position because I wasn't worth mattering in that world. And so, you know, that when I came to terms with what that was, and I heard other people saying that same story, I was like, wow, first of all, I'm not alone. You know, there's a lot of other people here who are saying similar things. Different stories, but the same story. You know, different circumstances, but the same exact stuff. And I met the guy that would become my sponsor back ways back, and he spoke some real wisdom to me about what I was experiencing, and it was just sort of like, just keep listening, keep coming back, keep listening. Be patient with yourself, and you'll start to see where this is all going. And I'm definitely grateful for that, and for the fact that I, you know, there were times where I didn't come back. I'm still here, but there were times where I didn't, you know. And after a while, I was like, "Wow, why is my life all fucked up again?" And then realized, you know, it's for codependents, it's hard to tell. Like when someone says, "When do you relapse? When does that happen for a codependent?" Because we're dealing with people, like, you know, if I'm around, like, a partner or around my kids or around a boss, like, at what point am I practicing in my codependency with them and have I relapsed? And usually for me, it's when things seem to be becoming unmanageable. That's really the only way I can, you know, say it. I can't stay away from people. I can't like not interact because that's the opposite. I need to have that functional relationship. So that's why we say in our program to have a functional relationship. The only requirement is functional relationships with other people. And so really it's like knowing good boundaries for ourselves. Like is it the right thing for me to say this right now, or that whatever it is, should I just keep it to myself? One of the greatest things my sponsor told me was sometimes you don't have to say anything at all. So when you hear something, you don't have to react. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to be sorry. You know, like one of my codependent characteristics was compliance. So we have a list of, I can find them in the book here, the big book. But one of the characteristics is compliance. And compliance is really like that I'll do or say whatever I need to say for me to believe you think I'm okay. So that I'm good enough, right? And we know that's, you know, it's self-esteem pattern. That I am somebody who, because you're okay with me, that I'm okay. Because for codependents, that's a really hard thing to understand. Where do I stand with other people? If I know where I stand there, then if you seem to be okay with me, so I'll do whatever I need to do to basically make that happen in my disease. Sometimes it's as simple as something like, I always use the example of like, either like saying yes to something I don't want to do, or not being decisive about something I want or someplace I want to be. And usually these things sound small, but they turn into like these larger issues of like passive aggressive behavior and frustration that's canned because I don't want to talk about why I'm upset, but I'm upset. But one of the examples I use is like, you know, when you've ever walked in the grocery store and there's like the indoor and the outdoor, and I'm walking the right way out the door, but somebody else is walking the wrong way, and I'll step aside and say sorry. You know, that's like, because I'm automatically in the wrong. I assume that I'm automatically not. I'm the person that's at fault for whatever that thing was. So that's sort of you know, like what for me what codependency is like. There's a lot of different attributes to it. I can see if I didn't know what literature you guys had here, but there's a blue book for CODA. And mine's obviously not very used. It doesn't, you know, get used. I had it for a long time. Actually, I think it might be in that. And there's a couple. I can just share this literature with you guys so I can show you what I'm about. There's a daily meditation, Language of Letting Go, by Melody Beatty, who's sort of like one of the pioneers in CODA. Really sort of like did a lot of groundbreaking work very early on in like the 70s, 80s. Helping form the program and figure out what it was, what she was seeing with lots of people who they were treating in other programs, which turned out to be codependency. Let's see it. I was going to try and find the character flaws. I didn't mark them. I should have marked them before I came here. Margaret, do you mind looking in? Can you look in the book and see those are on top? I just want to make you a list of like all the different. And so the other thing is a lot of programs use this, the daily meditation handbook. And this one actually had a really good one today. I usually try and read this every morning when I start, before I get too crazy. So September 8th says, in this moment, I'm free from worry and stress. Spent most of my life thinking that I actually have control over every aspect of my life. I've lost many nights of sleep worrying about things over which I had no control. Step 3 tells me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It sounds so simple, yet for me, it is my greatest challenge. I'm at a point in my recovery where I realize I have no other option but to work step 3. I only imagine that I was in control. Now I turn my will over to a caring and loving higher power. Letting go frees me from worry and stress. I sleep better. And that, you know, I have been sort of in my worry mode over the past like so many months, and so reading that was really like good for me today to hear, because there's sometimes I can just work myself up completely in my head and suffer in silence. Nobody knows what I'm, you know, I'm not sharing what I'm going through. You know, that really I tell sponsees in the program, I tell them the first word in this program is we, you know, like right there. We, it's not about I am powerless. If I'm out of control, I need to call somebody, call a sponsor, call a friend in the fellowship, go to a meeting, because that really, for me, that's right. I find, you know, like my sponsor would say, we're not all crazy in the same day. You know, thank God we're not all crazy in the same day. And that's really, you know, like if I'm going crazy, chances are he's probably, if he is, he says, I'll call you back. I can't talk to you. But, okay, there we go. Thanks. Yeah, these, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to begin. So that's, I guess probably it'd be good to read. I can read this section from Blue of what is codependence, and then I can read you about the patterns, the different types of patterns that we identify when we do the work and work through the steps. So what is codependence? Somewhere along this road, we learn about codependence. We hear about it from a friend or a therapist. We see it mentioned in the news. Many of us wonder if codependence describes who we are. Codependence is a disease that deteriorates our soul. It affects our personal lives, our families, children, friends, and relatives, our businesses and careers, our health, and our spiritual growth. It is debilitating if left untreated, causes us to become more destructive to ourselves and others. Many of us come to a point where we must look beyond ourselves for help. When we attended our first CODA meeting, many of us find a source for help. Each of us arrives here from different directions. Some of us are urged by family members or friends. Some of us come to CODA when our physicians, psychiatrists, or therapists see the need. Many of us reach CODA's doorstep after treatment from codependence and other addictions. Whether it's crisis or curiosity that brings us to CODA, many of us learn about the characteristics of codependence at our first meeting. These help determine what unhealthy patterns weave in and out of our lives. I'm going to skip down here a little bit. So many of us struggle with the question, what is codependence? Am I codependent? And we hear that a lot in the program when people come, and we tell them just keep coming back, because it's hard for any of us to say, like, whether or not, you know, if you believe you have codependent characteristics, then keep coming back. And if it's something where you think there's some other program that's more meaningful, then that's fine too. I know you guys are probably familiar with Father Leo Booth, who speaks a lot in recovery. He said in one of his books, all of us are a little codependent, some of us are a lot codependent. And so when I speak about these things like trouble with relationships with people or functional relationships, all of us can be like, well, I've had issues with people before, and that's a problem. You know, for all of us, it's been something at some point in time. But codependency, it really goes overboard. It really takes it to a whole different level. Like, one conversation can cause 3 or 4 days of just like ongoing obsessiveness, but how I could change that, talking myself out of that conversation almost to the point of OCD. You know, where in my head, I can fix that conversation. If I just try hard enough, I can fix it virtually after it's already happened. And so that's the craziness in the addiction. So the patterns are, there's denial patterns. Codependents have difficulty identifying feelings. They minimize, alter, or deny their feelings. Perceive themselves as being completely unselfish, dedicated to the well-being of others. Low self-esteem patterns. Codependents have difficulty making decisions, judging their thoughts, words, and actions harshly as never being good enough, are embarrassed to receive recognition, praise, or gifts, are unable to ask others to meet their needs or wants. Their needs, wants, values, or value other people's approval of their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors of self-approval. Compliance patterns compromise their values and integrity to avoid rejection and other people's anger, are very sensitive to other people's feelings and assume the same feelings, are extremely loyal, remaining in harmful situations too long, place a higher value on others' opinions and feelings, and are too afraid to express differing viewpoints or feelings. Putting aside personal interests and hobbies to do what others want. Accept sex as a substitute for love. Control patterns. Codependents believe that most others are incapable of taking care of themselves. Codependents attempt to convince others what they should think and feel. Become resentful when others refuse their offers of help. Freely offer advice and guidance without being asked. Lavish gifts and favors on those who they care about. Use sex to gain approval and acceptance. Have to be needed in order to have a relationship with others. So those are sort of some of the things we talk about, especially when someone's, you know, early in the program looking at how do I qualify as a codependent, or am I? If some of these things are the things that, you know, we see happening in our lives, or to a great extent, then, you know, there's a good chance to stay and come to a meeting, stay, keep coming back, and hear the message. And eventually, like we say, get a sponsor, work the steps. So I think if I can go back into when I did my first time, and when I looked at sort of where my life had become. I did it as a sort of a, I looked at my life from like the farthest memories I can remember, and I made sort of a timeline, and I started looking at what my life looked like and what I was doing. And sometimes it's really hard to identify, like, where did this come from? Where did it start? How did I get to this place? I remember as early as like probably 6 years old, 5 or 6 years old, that I remember sort of like it was people pleasing, that I was trying to, like with our parents, we want to make our parents happy and things like that. But I was doing things like just basically doing things that I would choose differently than what my happiness said I should be doing, like what I thought would be fun to do instead of do other things. And as far as control patterns, as a kid, I would hold my bladder a lot. And it's weird to like even say this in front of a group, but I would do stuff like, I would say extreme, like I would, and that's a control pattern for children, to, that's something you can control as a kid. And so you can, you know, to an extent, until it becomes like an absolute emergency, and then you're in a really bad position. And so it was something that, I didn't know why I did that. I had no idea. It was just something where I was like, whether I was afraid of it or whatever, there was something I did. And so it was confusing. It just was like, I don't understand why I did that. And so a lot of these things I found in my inventory early on, looking at who I was as a person, because I was like kind of checked out on who I really was. Finding this stuff, you know, I worked with my sponsor and realized that I had been practicing ways of controlling things for a long time, things that I could control. You know, when kids have temper tantrums and stuff, they're trying to control their environment. And I was definitely, you know, trying to control things that are uncontrollable. And when I was 6, 7, my parents got divorced. And so I think for me, that's where a lot of that stuff sort of, I think before that I was witnessing it. My dad was out of town a lot, traveled a lot. There wasn't any like actual, like, that I know of, any like practicing addictions in the household. Although, like I said, my dad found later he was codependent, and he definitely was in ACA, so he definitely had issues with his mom being a closet alcoholic. And so I think he and I talked about later on, I think that a lot of what happened is I sort of assumed a lot of his behaviors in order to get his approval, as weird as that sounds. And he was unrecovered, so he had no idea that was happening. And then when they got divorced, I didn't see my dad a lot. So I was always trying to sort of seek his approval, know that I was needed. We had a small family, too. I had no brothers or sisters and no close family around. So it's basically my mom and my dad and I, when they split, it was and we had moved from Ohio out here when I was a kid. So there was just my mom and I were living together, and my dad he moved like to a different town. And I'd see him every like twice a month, you know, but not a whole lot. He traveled a lot for business. And so I think that it was like my whole world sort of changed. And I say that as a kid, I sort of felt like I grew up sort of like in a vacuum. There was a lack of stimulus. There's sort of a lack of like, you know, it wasn't like, I didn't have like siblings to lean on to be like, wow, you're feeling this too, whatever's going on. I was kind of like in isolation. You know, I felt that isolation. And so the codependent characteristics are coping skills I built to be able to handle that, you know, to be able to make it to the next stage of whatever I need to get to. So, you know, fast forward into teenage years and adult years, I was practicing these behaviors thinking it was me, thinking it was like, that's who I am, and that's what I'm supposed to be doing, until I get to the point where I get into relationships where I start doing more for people and doing more than my, I say fair share, but more than I, a place where I could draw boundaries and be like, this is, I should be saying no to this, I should be saying this isn't something I'm comfortable with, whatever it is, so that I feel that I am half ownership of this relationship, and that I'm actually doing things that I want to do, and I'm satisfying my own needs and wants inside of me. And the biggest problem with that for codependence is that we blame other people for that. You know, we blame other people for, you know, in addictions, a lot of times we blame other people for some of the stuff that's happened in our lives, and as a justification for what we're doing. And so for me, it was justified that I could feel this way about, you know, in my family, that I could be upset and then act like I'm just totally fine and happy. It's no big deal. So moving into adult life, when I met, it was my girlfriend in college at the time we met, and we had a great relationship at first. And there quickly started to evolve a lot of these sort of patterns of like sort of I don't know. I guess it was just sort of like what I talked about. It was sort of like I would go along with almost everything. And I was like, okay. I was like the nice guy all the time. Like people say like codependents are like, oh, that's like the nice guy, the nice girl. The people are always like, always willing to say thank you for everything and so like helpful all the time. And I was trying to be that and do that. And so that happened. And in that, the person that I was with had their own separate issues that are not anything part of me, and that, you know, that, and but that sometimes codependents take these things on. And so I believe there was a lot of justification for when things like prescription pill use and things like that started happening, that it was like, that must be what is supposed to happen because I'm probably not doing a good enough job. I'm not, you know, like I was taking a lot of it on. Not until I got into the program, understanding that we all have our own stuff that we deal with, and that was not my stuff. Right, because that's the hardest part is the enmeshment with, not the hardest part, but a thing that's really hard about it is the enmeshment between, you know, a partner and a codependent, because you don't know where they, you know, I was talking to a sponsor the other day about that, like, if you see 50% as like a circle where it's each person shares this piece, it can be tipped in different ways to different, you know, whatever is in this wheel of like the things that you do or don't do that you like each contribute, right? But with codependency, it's sort of like, it sort of seems, it's the perception that it's sort of like a lot more of that circle. And sometimes it can seem like two interlocked circles where there's no connection. There's just two people who are connected to each other, pulling each other around, but there's no actual interaction. The interaction is very poor or it's just very superficial. And so I saw a lot of warning signs in that relationship for a long time, but I continued to sort of participate in a lot of this stuff. And things got really bad in our relationship, and I had a lot of guilt around the way things went. In the last years, our relationship was literally, it just sort of melted down completely. And so that was like 2004, 2005. In 2006, I found a program. I was absolutely falling apart, and I was like, literally, I say that if it wasn't for CODA, I would have killed myself, probably. Whether or not I did that on purpose, or I would have done that by just like absolute neglect of myself, that, you know, not giving myself any of the stuff I need to be able to thrive, I would have just deprived myself to the point where there's nothing left. And so I really do say that CODA saved my life in that way. I took it very seriously, and as I worked the program, I started to see a lot was revealed to me about myself. And about the nature of that I felt, a lot of things I felt guilty for, that I was like, wow, this is just like, these were just the things that happened in my life, and this was sort of the circumstance that I found myself in, and that I had to sort of take those old messages I had in my head and sort of take out the tape and erase it and start brand new with some fresh ways to do things. And one of those big ones is boundaries of people, you know, being able to say, you know, to say no when I'm not comfortable with something, and not have to explain it, not have to feel bad. You know, feeling bad is something like, if I feel like why do I feel bad about the decision I just made? And for some people, this seems like it's so simple, like, can't you just say yes or no? But it's very complicated for codependents to be able to regret every decision or feel like, to say something and then go off for days and be like, I really should call that person and tell them that I didn't like, just stewing over it. And they're not thinking about it anymore. They're totally on to something else. Completely on to something else. To the point where you'll come back 6 months later and say, hey, you know what? This thing that happened, and they're like, what are you talking about? I remember that. And I'm like, well, I've been thinking about it every night for 6 months. How I can fix it. How I can solve it. Or I actually did fix it a few times. You know, in my head. It's literally the insanity. You know, like then we say, doing something multiple times and expecting the same way, expecting it to change, you know, like it's not going to change. And so being able to just accept that stuff. So for me, that was where this sort of that transformation started happening for me. I mean, getting in touch with my higher power is a big deal. You know, like I look at the steps in sort of groups. So I'll use the, you know, up here, steps 1, 2, and 3, those are like sort of like, in a way, they're sort of like the emergency mode for me. Like everyone talks about like the 1, 2, 3, like, you know, my daily or hourly or minutely, I have to go through and remember that I'm powerless. Sometimes I wake up and I just repeat to myself, I'm powerless, powerless, powerless. Because I just am like, I've got to replace what's going on in my head with something else. And so, you know, once I regained sort of like that, I told myself 1,000 times I'm powerless. I have no control over this. What's next? You know, find my connection to higher power. You know, and so I came to believe in a power greater than myself. Step 3, made a decision to turn our lives over, our care of God as we understood God. Finding that relationship was tough because I had sort of cut out a relationship with a higher power. I thought that it had to be a religious relationship. I thought it had to be something that's through a church, that it was formatted and formal. I grew up as a kid Catholic. When my parents got divorced, the Catholic Church said they had to basically annul the relationship, or else my mom couldn't continue to go to church, or they wouldn't acknowledge her. And they would like send her, continue to send her letters under my dad's name and stuff like that to just say like, you know, you're still, until you annul the relationship, it's not. And once you annul the relationship, it would mean that I had to sort of start over with the church, and I wasn't really part of the church anymore because I was part of what would now become an illegitimate relationship. So, and that's sort of the guilt that goes along, I feel like, in some relationship, in some religions. And it's no knock against religions. I think everybody should have the right to practice and think what they want to believe in. But I think there is a lot of, at least for me, there is, I didn't really experience religious abuse, but I've had sponsees where I've heard real stories of being, you know, abused in a religious format, for not doing things right, for not remembering things right, for not reciting things correctly, for not practicing something correctly. And so for me, that stuff didn't work for me. And for I didn't connect in a higher power that way. You know, I could not find a higher power in any way. And so I felt like church was about like, following the rules and sitting there. And I was like, but this is just feels like a cold, rigid building where there's no people here that are talking about anything that's like, that's making me feel connected to a higher power, and I felt distant from it. So finding that relationship for me at first, it was like what I used. We say that, you know, whatever you find sort of a source of, you know, inspiration or healing or good feelings from, what you kind of go with that. And for me, just nature in general was something I really connected with. And so if I wanted to see my higher power, I'd go on a hike, you know, like I'd go walking. And so, because I feel like it's kind of all around me. And I told a sponsee a few weeks back, I said, I kind of see it like this, you know, when we stray from our path and we can't find our higher power, I said, think of a higher power like the sun. Like, we can't escape the sun. From being on earth here, we can't escape it. It's always there. Maybe it's nighttime and it's dark, but it's always right. We know where to find it. And it's there's no way to get away from it. It is present all the time. And so for me, finding that relationship took a little while and sort of a lot of sort of soul searching to figure out what was comfortable for me, and getting away from the patterns where I thought it had to be something that someone else told me it had to be, that it couldn't be something that I chose, you know. And, you know, so that was my, you know, God as we understood him, that God, what God would be, that's for me to determine what I understand it to be. 4, 5, and 6 were repair steps for me, in the sense that before I took a look at, you know, I took a look at my life and what had happened in my life, and sort of like all the things that I'd done throughout my life, took an inventory and sort of realized some patterns in my life. Actually in that step, just going through and finding, doing a searching and fearless more inventory, trying, going as deep as I can, and being open to a sponsor telling me, I think that's a little bit generalized, and I think you can go deeper there. And being open and willing, you know, another thing he taught me was to be that all I can pray for is willingness from my higher power. It's just to have willingness. Everything else is sort of like, I don't know, I'm not sure, but I can ask for the willingness from my higher power. So asking for willingness to be searching and fearless was really a big thing for me. So after I wrote my volumes and pages of stuff they came up with, in 5, going and talking to my sponsor about that, my higher power, and what did I find in that journey. Note 6, I became entirely ready to move for God to remove those defects of character. For me, that one was, as much as it was, seems like it's just like a simple decision, it was like entirely ready was something that I had to really work on, because there was a lot of things I still wanted to hang on to. There was a lot of character defects that I was like, those are still pretty useful to me. It's how I've gotten through, you know. And so that step did take a little while, because that was something where I was like, I don't want to let go of this. I feel comfortable. I'm leaving my comfort zone if I ask for this to be taken away. And the way it was explained to me is, if I'm not entirely ready, then I need to wait on that step. So I waited a little while on that step. When I got there, you know, in seven, I asked, you know, in the restoration for me, the restoration steps, I asked for that when I was ready. I asked for those shortcomings to be removed. And what I found in that step was that I was thinking that, like, everything I gave, I'm like, here, all this stuff I wrote, I don't need it, and it's gone, right? And it would, like, go away. That was not my experience. What I found was that there are some things that we're left with, that they don't go away, that I, for whatever reason, I'm either higher power intends me to still use those, but for some other purpose, for some other reason, whatever it was, or it's just simply not the right time. You know, it's not the right time for that to change, and I need to wait for more to be revealed. And so I think that in that step was really nice, because weeks and months later, I was like, wow, things are really, I really felt change in my life. I really felt like I was, there were things that, if anything, in being present, being aware of what I was doing in my life, I was starting to see some real concrete changes in the way that I interact with people. And the great thing was, I was like, I was actually pleasantly surprised that, like, I was finding that nobody cared about whatever that thing was that when I put my foot in my mouth, or when I, you know, said yes when I meant no, or whatever, or when I actually said no, I don't want to do that, that the reaction is like, okay, cool, whatever, you know, it wasn't anything horrible, you know, but that things as simple as that were like a huge moment of like, wow, this is actually possible. I didn't need that stuff. I didn't need to do things that way. And you know, and then so in eight, you know, I made the list of persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I think that one was pretty tough, because there are some people on the list that I still haven't been able to do. I put on a list, and there's people in step nine that I still haven't been able to make that amends to. I think there's some parts of for me. I know that the ninth step is about, it's not really about the other person. It's about, at least in code, it's about forgiving myself for the way that the way I acted, the things I did, and whatever the person's response is to the thing, that there's things that I feel guilty for, things that I feel wrong about, and that relationship that I was talking about, it's 10 years out now. I'm remarried now, and because we have three kids, we still have to deal with each other to an extent. And there isn't. I don't want to take anybody's inventory, so I don't know anything about her life. But I do know that we still practice the same patterns continue to come up, and they still sort of surface, and they still happen. And so, in my recovery, where I used to be very I'd be manipulative, I would be passive aggressive, I'd be compliant to all ends. Now I sort of have this like very tight wall of boundaries. In fact, I talk about it when I talked about it with a therapist a while back. I said it's like the big wall in Game of Thrones, you know, and there's like a little door, and I'm like, hello? No, don't want to do that. And that's it. You know, that's all I can do, because if I let any more, our relationship was so toxic, us together. You know, not her, not me, but what happened there was such a toxic mix that for me, if I have any more than a short conversation or anything more than about stuff for the kids, it gets really weird really quickly. And weird in the sense that it's like a lot of either blaming, shaming, guilt, stuff like that. And there's a lot of unsettled stuff there. And so that's one relationship where I really haven't been able to do what I wanted to do in this program yet, and I'm still working on that. Because it's a lifelong program, you know. I mean, I'm here for the long haul. How are we doing on time? Is it? I don't know.
You get okay. One more minute.
Oh, there. Oh, okay. There's a glare in there. Okay. Cool. So, you know, so in that way, like, there's still work to do there. I did a lot of made amends to my kids about stuff that. Some of the things that I didn't do right, got wrong, that I felt a lot of guilt for, I was able to go back and you know, and have an honest conversation with them about, you know, how I could have done, how things could have been different, you know, and that I felt, you know, that I was wrong for some of the things that happened, things I did, I got it wrong. And that was really freeing, because my kids were very accepting of that, and they were very like, they just really took it well. And now the kids, when they were littler during the divorce, now they're, my oldest son's 22, my middle daughter's 16, and my daughter's 13. And I have a five-month-old as well with my current wife. And we actually share recovery. She's in recovery too. And for me, it's very helpful because we're able to sort of bounce things off each other. Or when I get into a sticky place, I can say like for example, I really needed this meeting today and I didn't even realize it. You know, like I needed a meeting today. And CODA has less meetings than some of the other programs. It's sometimes hard to find one. Or there's like there's a Sunday women's meeting, I think, but in our area. But I mean, it's a little bit harder to find the meeting sometimes. So there's call-in meetings and stuff like that, but sometimes you just need like the personal connection. So in our program, we speak about, you know, beyond our wildest dreams, you know, that our promises say that we can expect a miraculous recovery and to have life beyond our wildest dreams, you know. And for me, that's really what it is now, because I have a whole new perspective on my life and a whole new way of seeing people around me. It's not, when I say whole new, most of it, I'll always have some of that stuff, you know. And there's times when I get hooked and I start doing codependent stuff with people, with my, you know, with, I do in work, it happens in all areas of our lives. So I can get codependent with money. It's a strange thing, feeling, you know, guilt about the things I've done, the things I've spent money on, or depriving myself, you know. And so those things do still happen, but I feel hope now that I didn't feel before. You know, I feel like hope that it's like, yeah, I got these things happened to me, and I went through a lot of stuff where I developed these coping skills, but that I don't have to be sort of defined by those. And so I sort of have found an entirely new path, which for me, it's great, because I talked about with my sponsor, I talked about getting to share my recovery with my kids too. And actually, two of my kids, my oldest had some addiction issues as well, and I was able to sort of in a weird way, I was able to practice some of my, I did get a little bit codependent with some of his stuff in years past, and since we've been able to work it out, but he did some recovery on his own, and both my daughters have been in Alateen. So a whole family sort of can practice, or we know, everybody is well aware of, like, that, you know, when we need to let go of things, and when we need to find, find our seeking a higher power and having your own path, that we all have our own path. And that's not something that I can give to my kids, you know, that they have to find their path on their own. So that, you know, that's really helped me. The hope from that, from the program, have given me that I have options and choices that I didn't know I had. I didn't realize I had a choice to behave differently than I was behaving until in program, a couple of people opened my eyes, many people in the program, but a couple of specific people who are like, this, you know, that what you're doing is by your choice. You're not a victim, you're a volunteer. And I was like, really? Say that again? You know, it just was like, I had to really be sort of hit over the head with it. You know, it wasn't something where it was like it was that easy to see for me. So it was revealed in time, you know, how I was what was going on. And so, real quick, I don't want to make short work of these steps, but I went through up to 9, 10, 11, and 12, making the daily inventory when I'm able to. Usually in the evening, I try and do that, take a look at how my day went, and sort of like how did I interact with people, what was going on in my life that was either unmanageability, were the things I spent too much time screwing around, figuring out something else when I needed to be doing something that was otherwise important to the family. Was I getting that out of balance? And making amends if I needed to. 11, continuing to seek my higher power through prayer and meditation. I found that, meditation's been really helpful for me. Like, at least getting quiet and listening to myself is really helpful, because then I can hear sometimes I can hear what's actually going on and through all the noise. Sometimes just focusing on breathing and not getting all spun out of control. And in 12, I tell some of my sponsees that I try to shorten these down to even one word, and 12 is just giving back for me. I mean, really it is. So being here today, working with sponsors or sponsees, you know, talking to people in the program and sharing, you know, carrying the message others who still suffer, because I'd like to say that newcomer is the most important part of any of these programs. At least for CODA it is. When newcomers come in, we're like, that's where I was. I'm still, you know, some days I'm still a newcomer. Some days I still, like, I come in and I'm like, where the hell am I at? And what is this all about? You know, and then I have to hear the message again. So I think that sort of, you know, for me, that was where 12 was really freeing, because I was like, I want to carry this message, because what I got, I need to, it's my, like, duty to pay this forward, to take it to other people, you know, so they can hear. And seeing people come in, and there's people, I've literally come in, I've been like, damn, that was me. That was me 10, 12 years ago. Like, it literally, I'm like, hear the story, and I'm like, I'll walk up and say, you're literally telling my story. And these people are shocked. They're like, what are you talking about? So just keep coming back, and you'll see what I mean. You know, so anyways, I think I can wrap up here. I think we're pretty close to the meeting time, but thank you for having me come here to speak. This is a really great meeting, and I feel like a newcomer, like I said, because it's a whole group of faces that are new. And so, anyways, thank you.
Thank you.